It's taken me a little while to get around to this one because it's complicated and it's important. Really, what I intend to do is to outline the best practices of communication as I understand them. This doesn't necessarily mean that these are the practices that I engage in all the time personally. I make mistakes constantly. But learning to communicate effectively is an endless process, in my opinion. And honing this skill is really important because it can support peace and harmony in your life. It can support the relationships that you care about. And by extension, it supports your mental and physical health. To start out, I'd like to provide two basic premises for my approach to communication. The first is, I would like to live in a world where everyone can express themselves fully. This would mean that they are free to express themselves as they see fit, and that they also will have the tools to express themselves effectively. I believe that freedom of speech is extremely important, and I know that that's a hot-button issue right now politically, but I would like to point out to anybody who has some reservations around freedom of speech that if you suppress speech, it has an effect of amplifying the anger and frustration that those people are feeling. If you stop people from having an open discourse, then all of that tension that they're holding, whatever it is that they're not letting out, it's more likely to come out later as violence. It's better to discuss these things head on. And from an emotional standpoint, I don't think anything should be off limits. However uncomfortable a discussion might be, however challenging it could be to confront certain issues in your life or the lives of others, that's very important work to engage in. And facing those things in a conscious manner has a way of alleviating tension that may otherwise just be held onto for years and years. The second premise is that all opinions are held in place by strong emotions. And so for that reason, it's best not to get too caught up in an intellectual debate when you're trying to resolve a conflict with someone. Debates of logic and reason can be enlightening in their own way, but when it comes to making an empathic emotional connection with somebody that you care about, or even a stranger, it's important to see the underlying emotional charge that they are holding and to connect with that and through that, rather than trying to get a point across intellectually. Because more often than not, when people hear an intellectual argument and they're attached to their opinion because of an emotional experience, they just dig their heels in deeper. I know everybody's seen this. I'm going to list some books in the description so that you can do some research if you're interested. The approach that I'm taking to communication is primarily oriented around nonviolent communication, which I'll abbreviate as NVC. It's going to be difficult to really pick up on NVC just from a recording, but it should be able to give you some idea of the goal of NVC and how it functions. When I say nonviolent communication, that does not mean that you don't stand up for yourself. That does not mean that you're permissive to people treating you poorly. What it means is that you are making a commitment not to do violence to punish others, or to try to force somebody into doing something that they don't want to do. Using punishment and reward to manipulate people has no place in nonviolent communication. Unfortunately, most of what goes on in society, between people and the government, between individuals in their families, and between employers and employees, falls into this category of reward and punishment. The perspective of nonviolent communication would say that all of this is life alienating behavior and that it only leads to more pain and suffering. I'll read a quote from Nonviolent Communication to express the general theme and the philosophy behind this work, just to give you an idea of where Marshall was philosophically and spiritually when he was writing this. Life-alienating communication both stems from and supports hierarchical or domination societies, where large populations are controlled by a small number of individuals to those individuals' own benefit. It would be in the interest of kings, czars, nobles, and so forth that the masses be educated in a way that renders them slave-like in mentality. The language of wrongness, should, and have to, is perfectly suited for this purpose. The more people are trained to think in terms of moralistic judgments that imply wrongness and badness, the more they are being trained to look outside of themselves, to outside authorities, for the definition of what constitutes right, wrong, good, and bad. When we are in contact with our feelings and needs, we humans no longer make good slaves and underlings. From Marshall's perspective, the implications of communicating in a life-alienating way permeate every level of society. And now that I understand his theory, and I practice it, I can see what he's talking about. At first, it seems a bit extreme, and the adjustment to nonviolent communication is about as difficult as learning a new language, because in my experience, it requires the development of new neural pathways. It requires mindfulness to notice when you're reacting to a situation rather than responding. It requires elevated consciousness to notice how you're behaving and how other people are behaving and to take responsibility for your behavior. Which leads me to the next point, and that is one of the most important fundamentals of NVC. No one is responsible for your needs, your feelings, or your behavior. And you are not responsible for anyone else's needs, feelings, or behavior. We are all responsible for having our own needs met. And the only way, in my experience, to get those needs met effectively is to communicate effectively. What does it truly mean to communicate effectively? It's something worth considering. I tend to think about it this way. Through our five senses, we are the center of the universe. We are experiencing everything that we see, hear, touch, smell, and feel from the perspective of ourselves. Everyone else is having the same experience. Their brain, their body, their organs are sensing and interpreting what's going on around them. And so in that sense, we are really living in a non-conformity reality. We're all having a unique perspective and experience of this life. Bridging that gap between our skin-encapsulated egos is not particularly easy. All of us have a different history, different programming that we grew up with. All of us have different interpretations of things as they go on. And so it's really important to clarify exactly what you mean to get your point across. To have a shared experience as much as it is possible given the physical boundaries between our experiences. Communication really is about shared experience. It's about clarifying exactly what's going on with you and sharing that understanding with someone else and hearing their experience and sharing that understanding with them. That connection is real, and you can feel it when it's happening. And when you don't have it, it can be painful. I think everyone listening to this can think of examples in their lives in which they felt one side of that equation and times when they felt the other. NVC really is built to facilitate the connection, to facilitate that feeling of union that you get with people when you really understand each other. And that can really be a beautiful experience if you're open to it. There's a specific formula for talking through the NVC process, but before I get into that, I want to talk about what I think is the core of NVC, and that is recognizing and communicating needs. When I say needs, I'm talking about something very specific, and this is ultimately the core human needs that all of us share. For example, the need for food, the need for shelter, the need for autonomy, the need for peace and love, harmony, the need for acknowledgement, respect, understanding, clarity. This list of needs is not infinitely long. In fact, you're capable of memorizing it. There's a list in the Nonviolent Communication book, and there are several lists available online under Needs Inventory. Often, needs get conflated with desires. They get conflated with specific recommendations. For example, you might say, "I need you to clean your room." That's not really a need. You might say instead, "I have a need for an organized living space, and I have a need for cleanliness. And when your room is not picked up, that need is not being met, and I feel frustrated." You'll notice in that sequence that there's no accusation of blame against the person whose room you'd like to have cleaned. It's simply a statement of what you're experiencing in the moment and how it's affecting you. I'll provide a second example of something you could say in this room cleaning scenario. "I have a need for accountability, and you told me earlier today that you were going to clean your room, and it hasn't been done yet, and so I'm feeling frustrated." Separating the needs out from the other factors in communication is easier when you think about the universal nature of these needs. Not everyone has the same level of needs in each area, but in general, it's easy to talk about needs because when you start talking about needs, you can relate to the other person. You can relate to what they're feeling and understand that you've had that need at times. You've had a need for clarity, or you've had a need for acknowledgement of your accomplishments, or you've had a need for appreciation, or perhaps you've had a need for alone time. These are needs that humans have at different times in their lives to different degrees. And so it helps us to drill down into the core experience of humanity. NVC is really about acknowledging the differences between people, but focusing on similarities and finding communion in those similarities. Needs are at the core of everything that we do. Every human action that is taken in the hopes of fulfilling a need. Unfortunately, many human actions are taken in a way that is destructive to meeting their own needs. And you can often see that very clearly, that the person wants something, but their behavior is actually driving that thing away from them. There's many, many examples. Anyone doing a violent crime, anyone who's trying to force anyone else to do anything, really, is taking a life-destructive action in the hopes of having their needs met. For example, if somebody cuts you off in traffic and you swear at them, does that fulfill your need for safety? Does that fulfill your need for holding people accountable? That's not really for me to say, but I would say that the response you're going to get is more likely negative and going to spiral into a more dramatic experience than necessary if you swear at somebody who cuts you off. So reminding ourselves at every moment that every human action is being taken in the hopes of fulfilling a need can be very liberating, ultimately. Even the guy who recklessly cut you off with your family in the car, he was trying to get a need met too. However destructive his behavior was in that moment is really just a result of some miswired programming that has happened earlier in his life. And we have no control over that. All we have control over is how we respond to it. There's lots of pain, trauma, and suffering in the world. I see it everywhere. If I have the strength, clarity, mindfulness to choose to be a force of good in the universe and not to expand that trauma, but rather to assist in reducing that trauma, I will always choose that path as long as I'm conscious enough to notice that I'm doing it. Really, that's much easier said than done. But I also know that the only thing that really gets in the way of that peace of mind is trauma. And so when I'm acting out in a way that's alienating people, I know I'm coming from a place of fear and pain. And I know the same thing when it's coming from someone else. So I've taken the time to build a practice to show empathy towards people who are lashing out. And I try to give myself and that person the space to process whatever it is that they're needing to process. One other important thing that I've found about NVC is that if you can't hold space for yourself, you can't hold space for anyone else. So it's important to check in with yourself first before you start trying to help others. If you're not ready, then it's going to come from a place that's not genuine, and it's ultimately not going to be helpful. You're just going to end up creating a situation where you feel resentful and the other person doesn't feel fulfilled. This is all about mindfulness and authenticity. So the foundation of all human action comes from needs. But the moment-to-moment experience that we're having is centered in emotion. So the next process I'm going to address is the ability to notice the emotions that are going on within you and to appropriately label those emotions so that you can communicate them. For example, in this moment, I'm feeling rather excited because I enjoy doing this work. This work fulfills my need, supporting people in making improvements in their lives. It fulfills my need for creativity and personal growth because as I teach this, I'm learning also. So yeah, I'm feeling a lot of gratitude right now. I'm feeling gratitude for the technology that's enabling me to do this and for the time that I have to do this. I'm feeling gratitude for all the people who are listening to this because I think it's very important and I enjoy sharing it. However, I would say it hasn't been super easy for me to learn to express myself. A lot of times it's difficult to pinpoint what emotion you're feeling. It takes a certain meditation to sit there and really tune into your body in the present moment and just notice how are you feeling. A lot of people are living their lives completely oblivious to how they're feeling. Sometimes this is because they're simply not noticing, and other times it's because there's certain emotions that they don't want to associate with themselves. They're ashamed to admit that they're feeling angry, or they're scared to express that they're sad. What this ends up doing is creating a disconnection between the individual and their moment-to-moment experience. Personally, I believe that that is the core of most of the psychological issues that we're seeing. And so sometimes it's hugely therapeutic just to notice how you're feeling and say it out loud to somebody. And that can be a very vulnerable experience. But if you do it with an open mind, an open heart, and you just communicate clearly to the other person, and you know that they're not responsible for your feelings, and you're not responsible for theirs, that is true communication. That is really speaking your truth. Nobody can make you feel anything. The guy that cuts you off in traffic, and you fly into a blind rage, that was your choice. You have a moment, however short that instant might be, it is there. You have a choice on how you interpret the event and how you react to it. Every single thing is a choice. Nobody can make you do anything. They can make your life miserable to the point where you don't think you have a choice anymore. That kind of coercion, unfortunately, happens all the time. But they cannot force you to take action, and they cannot force you to have a certain feeling. I hear all the time people say, "Oh, I just wish I could make my wife happy. That person's making me so angry." It's fundamentally untrue. You make yourself angry. Your wife makes herself happy. It's our interpretations that make us feel certain things. That doesn't mean there aren't actions you can take to make it easier for your wife to be happy, or situations that you can change in your life that make it harder for you to get triggered and become angry, those reactions, those emotional responses are up to the individual. And so in that sense, we can have full agency over it. But many or most of us are living very unconsciously. And so it's difficult to notice that split second instant in which you're choosing to have a certain reaction to something. It's difficult to pick up on the programming that we've received from our childhood. Babies really don't have much of this at all. They come into the world and they're just living right there in the moment. They're not worried about the future. They're not concerned about the past. They're just reacting to what is going on around them, purely. But as we grow up and become more conscious, we end up with all this residual trauma that comes along with disappointments and sadness and guilt and shame. Stuff we're not even really aware of. Stuff that happened before we were 5 years old, but it's in there. And sometimes simply noticing it is enough to let go of it. That's why this is not just important for relationships, but also important from a personal growth and healing standpoint. There is also an inventory of feelings in the NVC book, and you can find an inventory of feelings if you Google NVC feelings list or feelings wheel. You can find some pretty good ones. There are some tricky ones out there. For example, I'm feeling disrespected. That one's kind of tricky because that implies causation. That kind of takes your power away. I'm feeling invalidated. You validate yourself, ultimately. Nobody can invalidate you. And if you say you're feeling invalidated, that basically takes the responsibility away from yourself and places it on the person who's talking to you. NVC is about radically accepting accountability and responsibility for everything that you do and nothing else. Sometimes a way to kind of cut through those words when someone is using them to describe how they're feeling is to then ask them, okay, you're feeling disrespected. What does that feel like in your body? And underlying that word, disrespected or invalidated, is usually anger or frustration or disappointment or despair. So you can get a little bit deeper into it and then listen deeply and be present for them sharing that and not take it personally. The other thing to look out for, and this is definitely the most common issue I run into when trying to teach someone NVC, is they'll often start a sentence, "I feel like." And most of the time, like 90% of the time, when you say, "I feel like," you're about to say something that's not actually a feeling. For example, I feel like I need to go to the store. I feel like this really isn't my problem. I feel like you should brush your teeth. None of those are feelings. And it's important to follow up the statement, "I feel," with an actual feeling word so that you can get down to the core of what you're experiencing. Otherwise, you're really not communicating effectively. Once you've noticed and identified the feeling that you're experiencing, and maybe spent some time reflecting on what that's bringing up for you and why you're interpreting it that way, although you may not always know exactly why, then you start taking a look for what needs are not being fulfilled and where those emotions are being stirred up. Those are the two core elements of the NVC formula. It's a four-part process, and I'm going to run through it with an example. I'll warn you that this sounds a lot simpler than it is in practice. Before you jump right into the process, one good thing to do is to give the person you're talking to a heads up that you're going to talk about something that's important to you, and also to give them a little bit of a rundown about how NVC works. Remind them that none of this is an attack, that even if you're feeling angry, it doesn't mean you're angry at them. It just means that you're feeling angry. It's a good practice to ask them if they're prepared to have a discussion and to check in with them about how they're feeling in that moment. Because if you just launch into the NBC process without asking the person you're talking to if they're ready to have a discussion, you may not get very far. If that person isn't ready to talk in that moment, it might be a good idea to set a time frame about when you're going to revisit the discussion. But assuming that they have agreed to have this discussion with you and you're getting the feeling that they're in a receptive mood, this is the process. The first step is to make a concrete observation about something that happened. It's important not to add any judgment or assessment into the observation. For example, earlier today, I asked you to buy bread, and you came home without bread. That is a concrete fact that has no judgment interwoven into it. It's just something that happened. You're not saying you ignored what I said earlier today completely. Or a common thing that somebody might say in this situation is, you never listen to me, or you don't care enough about me to do what I ask. You can see how any one of those may escalate very quickly into a fight. There's a lot of blame, accusation, intensity there, and you can share that intensity by talking about the feelings that are coming up for you. But when you aim your blame at somebody, it often just makes the situation worse. Another tip I heard for alleviating tension that is very helpful is to not overgeneralize the argument. When you're talking about something that's upsetting you, it's best to talk about specifically what's happening in this moment and not to generalize it out to the entire relationship. Words like never, always, every time, these types of words seem to trigger an emotional response from the person you're talking to that leads them to believe that you're questioning the entire relationship just because they forgot a loaf of bread, which naturally can be really upsetting, and that can escalate the drama quickly. The next step is to name the feeling. When you came home without bread, I felt very disappointed and frustrated, and whatever other feelings are going on for you in that moment. At this point, if you're able to, you can also express why your interpretation led to you feeling frustrated. You could say, I interpreted that as inconsiderate or forgetful. And it's important to clarify that interpretations aren't meant to be taken personally. They're simply an outward explanation of what's been going on for you internally. It's not necessarily reflective of reality. It's just the way that you're interpreting the situation. If you are going to provide some kind of an explanation or interpretation, it's very important that you say, I feel sad because I. If you're beginning a statement like, I feel frustrated because you, then we skipped blame in the first step with the observation, and we're transporting it into the next step, which is talking about feelings. I feel angry because of your behavior is what nonviolent communication would consider an accusation or judgment. So it's important to remember, I feel whatever feeling I'm feeling because I interpreted the situation this way. Phrasing your communication in that way takes ownership for your experience, which makes it easier for the other person to listen to you fully without interpreting what you're saying as an attack. When you're expressing yourself to someone else, it's best not to assume their intentions, because really you don't know what their intentions are. You may think you know, and you may be right, but if you want to make a connection with them that's likely to get your needs met, it's best not to approach the discussion from an accusatory angle. It's best to assume that their intentions are neutral or good, even if you're pretty well sure that they're bad, because this is a trust-developing process. The more trust you can develop with someone, the more likely you are to get your needs met. If you approach a discussion from a place of blame and accusation, the other person is very likely to lock up and they won't do anything to help you. So now you've communicated the observation, you've expressed the feeling, and as an option, you've expressed maybe some of the interpretation that you went through that led you to that feeling, followed by the need that is not being met. Expressing the need is the third step. When you came home without bread, I felt frustrated and disappointed because I have a need for accountability and reliability, and I need that bread so that I can make lunch for the kids tomorrow. Taking care of the kids is very important to me. Those are some examples of needs that you could express if someone forgot the bread. The last step in the equation, the fourth step, is to make a specific, concrete request. In order for this whole process to work, it has to be a genuine request. You have no expectation about how they're going to respond to the request. If you make a request and they deny the request and you punish them for that, then really it was a demand disguised as a request. And that's not how NBC works, because that breaks down trust. When phrasing a request, it's best to phrase it in positive terms, not to ask somebody what you don't want them to do, but rather to specifically explain what you do want them to do. This tends to provide more clarity and is also more likely to support a positive outcome. An example for the previous scenario could be, would you be willing to start using a shopping list when you go to the grocery store? It's more specific and it gives the person a very clear idea of what it is that you want. One funny example that I've heard Marshall talk about is a wife who goes through the NBC process and then at the end says, would you be willing to spend less time at work? Okay, so what does the husband do? He starts taking off early from work and playing golf. That does not meet her need. That's not what she had in mind. What she really wanted was companionship. She wanted him to be around more. But you can see how it's important to be specific and to phrase the request positively rather than negatively. But as I said before, when you make a request, you need to be prepared to have that person deny the request. Just as no one can force you to do anything, you can't force anyone else to do anything either. The step after that would be to talk to them about how they're feeling. Try to walk them through the NBC process if you can. Something that's really helpful in making sure that you're communicating effectively is to ask them to repeat back to you what they're hearing. So then you can get some clarification on how they're interpreting what you're saying to them. Unfortunately, very few people know about this process. And I do see it growing in popularity and in recognition, but it's not common that you meet people who are well-versed in NBC. And so it's up to you as the NBC learner or practitioner to interpret what is being communicated to you in NBC. If someone yells at you, you're an idiot. Okay, what feeling is being expressed there? Clearly anger, disappointment maybe. What's the need that's not being met? Nobody would communicate that way unless they had a need that was not being met. And so you can try to guess based on the context. Maybe they have a need for support that's not being met. Maybe they have a need for competence, which they don't think you're meeting, but you simply need further information to understand what they're saying. There are many different ways to interpret an angry comment like that. However toxic their expression of that need is, you can develop the tools to hear them in NBC and then communicate back in NBC. When you get to that point, it's like a superpower. You can alleviate tension in almost any situation. It really can be incredible. I've seen it work. I've done it myself. And as I said earlier, I don't do it all the time, but I do my best when I remember to work on it. And my understanding of NBC has really come in waves. It's taken a long time to sort of internalize a lot of this stuff. The best way that I've found is by actually talking to a group of people. Sometimes you can find a Zoom meeting about it. If you're living in a larger city, there's often meetups that do NBC. More and more lately, I've been seeing yoga studios holding NBC classes. So just Google the name of your city and NBC and see if you can find a practice group close by. Because reading about NBC is like reading about how to ride a bike. It's hard to actually do it unless you put your feet on the pedals and go. Another thing that I've found helpful is listening to Marshall in his YouTube videos. watching the way that he conducts his seminars is really important in understanding what he's getting at and how he does it. Don't let the puppet scare you. He uses puppets to identify jackal and giraffe communication, and it can be pretty cheesy sometimes, but if you just let that be what it is, you can see that he's doing it for a reason, and it's actually quite funny when you get used to it. At the end of the day, this really is about getting to the core of your inner child, finding the similarities in human experience between everyone, and really cutting through all the nonsense and getting to what matters, resolving the things that people are actually fighting about. Sometimes family members will be having an argument for years and years and years, married couples having arguments that last 20 years, the same argument. And it's because both of them are not communicating or hearing each other's needs. When you talk about the issues you're having from the standpoint of what needs are not being met, it's much easier for the other person to empathize with you. And when you hear the other person's needs that are not being met, it's much easier for you to empathize with them. None of this is an excuse for what I would consider outright harmful or evil behavior. And NVC draws an important distinction here. If you need to use physical force to restrain someone from hurting someone else, that is appropriate. However, if you're using physical force to punish someone, then you're stepping over a line and you're taking it to the point where you're making it your job to judge and discipline someone. And ultimately, that is not up to you. It's up to them to make the changes in their life. All you can do is protect yourself from their behavior by separating yourself from them and by preventing them from hurting you or others. So I know I blew through a lot of content, but quick recap. Step one, concrete observation. Step two, name the feeling. Step three, name the need. Step four, make a specific request, trying to meet that need. Sometimes that request isn't going to fulfill your need even if they do it. It's not a science, it's a practice. And sometimes you're not going to know exactly what specific request to make. And so in a circumstance like that, what I would usually recommend is to request that they repeat back to you what they heard. If they repeat back to you what they heard, you can really clarify for them and clarify for yourself what you're trying to communicate. And that can be healing all in itself. I know that shifting to this way of communicating can feel really clumsy and unnatural at first. Sometimes it feels like you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. But with practice and with some experience and with some guidance from other people who practice NVC, you can learn to do it naturally in a normal tone of voice and at a normal speed, where you just live in NVC. You hear in NVC, you speak in NVC, and it becomes second nature. Once you get a little bit more comfortable with the process, you can start to experiment with it and see how you can modify it and make it sound more natural to you, what makes sense in your life. But it's important to remember the key principles of NVC. You're not responsible for anybody's feelings. They're not responsible for yours. You're not responsible for meeting other people's needs. They're not responsible for meeting yours. We are all responsible for our own feelings and for having our own needs met. And if that isn't a radical shift in consciousness, I don't know what is. This recording was really meant to just be an introduction to NVC. So if what I said here seems relevant to you and you're interested in learning more, I'd highly recommend getting the books that I'm listing in the show notes and looking for a group locally that you can work with or one online. I guarantee you, the first couple times you have a positive NVC experience, you will be hooked. You'll see that there is truly power in this method and that there's real value that can alleviate tension and resolve conflicts and mediate between people who are at each other's throats. It's a wonderful skill to develop if you have the time and interest in doing so. After developing NBC, Marshall dedicated the rest of his life to trying to teach it to people and utilize it to relieve conflicts between countries, between warring tribes, between family members, between gangs in inner cities. And there's many stories in his books about these experiences. NVC is really more than just a tool for communication. It's a philosophy about life. It's a way of thinking about what people are saying and what their intentions are. It's a way to center in and become more mindful of your intentions, and the way you're communicating with others is really a representation of who you are and the role that you're playing in this life. Ultimately, it's a choice. It's about what you want to bring to the table. It's about your desire to alleviate tension or create tension, your desire to connect with people or to alienate people. In my experience personally, and in the experience of most of the people I know, there's simply a lack of understanding around communication that leads to a lot of conflict and breakdowns. It's really just a matter of understanding and integrating this information that will help to alleviate a lot of the tension that's in everyone's life. It hasn't been an easy undertaking, but as I've developed the skill, the rewards have continuously gotten greater and greater. The peace of mind that it's given me is worth more than anything I could possibly express. And the comfort that I've developed in my ability to handle emotionally difficult situations, no matter what they are, as they arise, is wonderfully liberating. I think of it sort of the way that a lot of jiu-jitsu fighters have expressed to me, that they're never worried that they're going to be attacked because they know that they can handle it. This is like jiu-jitsu, but for communication and relationships. Any situation that you walk into, you know you're going to be able to handle it because you're prepared. And that's a beautiful thing. So if what I've shared here is of interest to you, I'd highly encourage you to continue your research on this topic. I think you'll be thankful that you did it.